Good morning. I feel at a slight disadvantage following all these excellent presentations by entomologists who came and paved the way before me. So I hope I can live up to some of the things we've seen already. I chose the title of this talk, Current Trends in Vector Control, Adapting to Selective Pressure. We're talking about the evolution of military entomology, and I'm hoping that I can sort of tie all of this together, and you can see how things that we as entomologists have experienced over the past, how that has evolved into a very robust research program, which then goes back into and supports the work that those entomologists do, and also to kind of highlight a little bit of how we've adapted to some of the external pressures, what we see in the field, as well as how things change as far as things like funding and those kinds of things within the military. So I'm hoping to be able to tie all that together. Also adapting to selective pressure, I'm not going to speak specifically about Operation Iraqi Freedom, which I participated in, but I will highlight how things that we have experienced there have certainly changed some of the research that we're doing at Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. So this is the mission statement for the Division of Entomology, of which I belong. We conduct research, testing, and product development activities, and the key here is reducing the risk of vector-borne disease to U.S. military personnel and DoD support personnel. We're deployed, DoD personnel and military personnel, in over 130 countries in operations like Enduring Freedom and Iraqi Freedom, as well as the humanitarian operations that you've seen highlighted here today. And our goal is to go in, assess the risk, figure out what the threats are, and then mitigate those risks as best we can. And these are some of the ways we do that, and I'll talk a little bit about the different things that we do in the division. But I just want to highlight, this is our primary customer. I mean, we are the military, and we are out there to provide products either for this guy to use himself or for military entomologists to use in order to protect this guy. And it might be hard to see, but this is a guy who is in the National Guard, so this is not a full-timer. He's got flea collars on his boots because somebody probably told him that was the way to keep sand fleas away from him. And you can see he doesn't have access to a tent or a bed net or anything like that. This is the guy that sort of is our focus. What can we do to protect this guy who's out there sleeping on top of his Humvee as he's rolling into Iraq or Afghanistan? These are some examples of sandfly bites. Of course, in Operation Iraqi Freedom, that's been a major concern for us is sandflies and leishmaniasis. And you can see we've got a lesion here. Here we go. We have a lesion here, but we've got just tons and tons of sandfly bites, and we've seen the same thing with mosquito bites. So while it may not always be an issue of disease transmission, of course, we've seen that that's extremely important, but it's also a morale issue. If you're a guy out there or a girl out there sitting and trying to do your mission, you're getting eaten alive by mosquitoes and sandflies, you're really not going to be concentrating too much on what it is you're supposed to be doing. And then once you're eaten up like this, you're uncomfortable for days. And if there is disease transmission or some kind of secondary infection or an allergic reaction, that person is then pulled out. So that has an impact on manpower days, on mission effectiveness, and it's a tremendous cost to the military and to the DoD to treat people after they've already contracted a vector-borne disease. So we hope to prevent these kinds of things from happening in the first place, and the kind of research that we do at Walter Reed is to try to prevent those. This is our organization for the Division of Entomology, and we're divided into six departments, and I'm going to talk about the kinds of research we do in the Department of Vector Control, but I just want to highlight a little bit of what we do. We've got the Walter Reed Biosystematics Unit, which focuses on mosquito and sandfly and tick identification tools. We've got our Department of Molecular Diagnostics, which focuses on point-of-care assays. So, you have someone present at a military treatment facility in a downrange situation to be able to pull a sample from that person, run a point-of-care assay, and say, yes, this person has leishmaniasis, or yes, this person has malaria. So from an actual human sample, we've got our Department of Immunodiagnostics. As Colonel Horasco mentioned, they didn't have any diagnostic tools once they caught the anophelines or whatever they were capturing in Somalia. They had no way of determining whether or not these things were infected with malaria, and we have a whole department that's dedicated to doing those kinds of assays in the field. Leishmaniasis, Rifelli fever, all these were handheld tools. And then we've got our Department of Mosquito Biology, in our Department of Sandfly Biology, and we have large insectary where we've got several strains of sandflies, and mosquito species where we support a lot of the malaria vaccine challenges that go on at Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, as well as basic research on sandfly biology and mosquito biology. Again, I'm going to talk about the Department of Vector Control, which is my department. And here is our specific mission: to research, develop, and field new personal protective measures, vector surveillance, and control methods to protect military personnel. So sort of a three-pronged approach. We've heard about personal protective measures. We've seen how entomologists go out in the field and do vector surveillance and apply control methods. And a lot of what entomologists do in the field is generate that those tools and products are generated here, or at least started here at Walter Reed. So why things have changed? Our current operational environment, certainly Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom, have highlighted new needs, specifically with sandflies, incidents of leishmaniasis. We have over 2,000 cases of cutaneous leishmaniasis. And we've also started to see that some people are also coming down with sandfly fever. We've had some issues with sandfly surveillance and control. It's not quite the same as going out and surveilling for mosquitoes, which we're very good at, because those have been typical threats through most of our operations. And we've got this ongoing problem of non-compliance on personal protective measures, and some people have spoken to that. We've got this product that's a 33% DEET product. You certainly can't set fires with it anymore, but it doesn't mean that people are using that product. And so we have to think about ways to bring new things that people will actually use. There have also been some concerns about the permethrin uniform treatment. Colonel Horasco mentioned the permethrin uniform treatment, and we've seen people get concerned. There's sort of a CNN factor that goes on. You know, someone hears one little thing about how DEET or permethrin, is dangerous, and the next thing you know, guys aren't going to wear permethrin-treated uniform. They think it's going to make them sterile. They think it's going to, it's a whole host of reasons that people are afraid of some of these things. And then rapidly changing technologies. And by that, I mean there's a lot of there are a lot of companies, small businesses, there are a lot of people out there doing great things with formulations when it comes to things like topical repellents, when it comes to things like insecticides. And we can capitalize on that. And what I'm going to show you is that we do that by partnering with lots of different people outside of the DOD to make those things happen. And so how they've changed, I think in vector control we have a very multifaceted approach. We work on lots of different projects, and we also work on one individual project from lots of different angles. We leverage small businesses in the commercial sector to meet our needs. We're not really in the business anymore of developing vector control products or surveillance products from the ground up. It's very expensive. It's several million dollars to put a new repellent onto the market. And when you've got companies out there that are doing it already, we want to capitalize on that and see if it meets our needs. So we have a program called the Small Business Innovative Research Program. We've been very successful in vector control and getting projects started through that program. We also use cooperative research and development agreements and material transfer agreements with small companies and businesses as well. And we also realize that you have to get early buy-in. So we can do all the research that we want at RARE, but if we don't have buy-in early on from the end user, we have PEO Soldier, which stands for Program Executive Office. They do everything. Anything that has to go on the soldier, anything to do with what the soldier carries or wears, they're involved. And if you get early buy-in from those guys and say, hey, we're doing stuff that can meet some needs that you have, then when we have a product, we have somebody that's ready to take that product and actually use it. We also tie in with the AMED Center and School down in San Antonio and with the Armed Forces Pest Management Board. And then finally, I'll talk a little bit about how we're taking our knowledge as military entomologists and transferring it to kind of a unique environment. And I'm just going to quickly just put this slide up, and I'm going to talk about lots of different projects that we have going on. And remember, I mentioned that our mission tackles personal protective measures, vector surveillance, and vector control. And I just want to highlight some of the things that we're doing, show you how we're getting those things done by pulling in small businesses and working with CRADAs and MTAs to get some of these things out there. One of the big things we're working on as far as personal protective measures is a new topical repellent formulation to either replace or go in as an alternative to the current military repellent, which is DEET-based. And this product came into the military in 1990. It's a 33% DEET formulation, and it was a vast improvement over what we called the bug juice, which was an alcohol-based. I think it was 75% DEET. This was the stuff that they used to, you know, to light on fire. It's a good product. It works really well, but as you've seen in previous talks, people don't really like to use it, and we've seen lots of issues with non-compliance in our current operational environment, either anecdotally, people finding out that, yeah, you know, they know it's out there, but they don't want to use it, or they don't like to use it, they don't like the feel of it, so on and so forth. And there have actually been some surveys done as people are coming out of theater, you know, about their personal protective measures, what are they using, and we see that there's a lot of non-compliance. There are a lot of issues as far as command emphasis that we don't have any control over, but we feel if we put some products out there that maybe have a better skin feel or aren't DEET based but still work as well as the current repellent, that gives people alternatives to use other than this military repellent. And as long as they're using it, then we've done our job. So we do a lot of research. We have part of it is funded by the Military Infectious Disease Research Program, or MIDRIP. We have CRADAs with a couple of companies. And again, we're capitalizing on what people are already putting out onto the market and adapting that and seeing that will work for military usage. We test these repellents all over the world. I said we're deployed in over 130 countries, and we want to see and make sure that these things work against a variety of vectors. In addition to a topical repellent, another option is something called a personal wearable repellent device. This is, we're pulling in from lots of different resources. We've got funding from the Military Infectious Disease Research Program, funding from the Deployed Warfighter Protection Program, and we also have an SBIR project. It's in phase two. And here, instead of putting on a topical repellent, which someone may not want to do, the idea is to have a long-lasting spatial repellent and some kind of device that could be clipped onto the uniform or clipped onto a rucksack or something like that would provide sort of like a halo effect to repel mosquitoes and sandflies. Improving bed nets and materials. You saw some photos of some of our old bed nets, issues with those. Again, funded in lots of different ways through MIDRIP. We have SBIRs, we have CRADAs with different companies, and the idea is not only to look at improving the design of the bed net so that it's larger, it's more comfortable to be in, but also looking at different fabrics. We know that with a traditional bed net fabric, sandflies pass easily through that mesh size. So one alternative is to make it a smaller mesh size. Well, once you do that, then you restrict the airflow, and then it's not comfortable, and the soldier doesn't want to be in it. So it's sort of, you know, balancing mesh size, the types of chemicals that can be put on that to treat it, to prevent both mosquitoes and sandflies from getting through. And then again, user acceptability. So tapping into what does the end user want to see, because if the end user doesn't like it, then it, you know, there is no reason for us to have gone through all the trouble to do this research. And we are evaluating these things not only in the lab at Walter Reed, but also in the field. Surveillance. Colonel Horasco mentioned that they had light traps, but they didn't have dry ice to do surveillance. And if you've ever, you know, been in some of these places, dry ice is not easy to come by. And I can tell you there was no dry ice to be had at Camp Victory in Iraq. And that's the case pretty much everywhere we go. So what's an alternative? One of the things we're working on is a field deployable CO2 generator, something that's small, very rugged. Soldiers aren't very good to their equipment, so it has to be something that will withstand a soldier picking it up and throwing it in the back of a Humvee and then throwing it on the ground when they get to wherever they're going, and something that will last for about 12 hours of surveillance. And we've got lots of really great companies that are working on this. We have MIDRIP funding, we have two SBIR partners, and we've got CRADAs and MTAs with other companies, again capitalizing on what other people are doing to meet our needs. And also because we've seen that sandflies are such an issue with our current operational environment, our current operational tempo, evaluating not only CO2 generators, CO2 generators as sort of general attractants, but specifically looking at things like sandfly attractants. What can we employ with light traps that will specifically attract sandflies in areas where sandflies are a primary concern? And again, evaluating those things not only in the lab with our sandfly colonies, but also in the field as well. Vector control products. One of the things we're working on is a residual insecticide formulation for hot desert environments, and this is primarily through an SBIR. We haven't really been too involved in research on insecticides or pesticides lately, but this is something that really did specifically come out of what's going on in Operation Iraqi Freedom, where we've seen evidence that the current residuals that are on our DOD contingency pesticide list weren't really doing the job at controlling sandflies. And particularly a lot of this evidence came out of the first rotation that went through Talil Air Base, where they were using the residuals, expecting based on the label that this should last for X amount of time, and then finding out that it wasn't really working that well. Some thoughts are that because it is such an intense environment, high heat, lots of blowing dust and sand, also intense UV, that these things are just breaking down long before their residual, what we would expect for their residual. So we are working with a company to come up with an improved formulation that can still be used with our current equipment, basically just dropped right into our contingency pesticide list, that will work, especially for sandflies, but particularly in these harsh environments. Again, with sandflies, another project that's been going on is a rodent treatment and bait box. We know that sand rats are a reservoir for leishmaniasis, and that the sandflies live in the burrows. This has MDRIP funding, and it's also through a partnership with a researcher at Uniformed Services, University of Health Sciences, where we're looking at basically taking the old rodent bait box and modifying it to combine a topical and systemic insecticide treatment. So as they enter the bait box, they get a topical treatment, and then inside there is food that is impregnated with an insecticide, so then once they eat the food, then that insecticide is then becomes systemic to control sandflies and transmission of leishmaniasis. And then sort of along with using things like bed nets, we also have things where we're looking at treated flooring to control sandflies in particular, and barrier treatments. And again, a lot of this is coming straight out of the experiences in OIF and OEF. And again, this is funded by multiple agencies, MDRIP and the Deployed Warfighter Protection Agency or Protection Program, and CRADAs with various companies. So we don't just do research for the individual. We really have gotten into where we're really expanding and transferring our knowledge. So we're very good at environmental risk assessment. I mean, that's our job. We go in and we assess the threat. And so we're taking some of that knowledge and transferring it to another program, the Biological Threat Reduction Program, which is funded by the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, or DTRA. And we're involved in this environmental risk assessment program in the Republic of Georgia, Azerbaijan, and Uzbekistan, where we're basically training in-country scientists on how to do surveillance, identify the threats that they have there, and we're working with WRBU for that. How to detect pathogens and vectors, so using these assays and PCR techniques that we've developed. We're collaborating with USAMRIID on that. And then basically teaching them how to map, what they're finding, the vectors along with the diseases that those things are carrying, into a GIS system so they can create maps for their own countries for the major dangerous pathogens that they have there. So this is a really nice opportunity for us to sort of transfer our knowledge to these former Soviet Union countries. And then finally, one of the big things that we're looking ahead to, and I mentioned earlier, are concerns about the permethrin treatment on uniforms, some issues about permethrin safety or concerns about permethrin safety, and then lots of new uniform fabrics that are coming out, the fire retardant ACUs, the Nomex, things that we haven't really had experience applying permethrin to before, and it doesn't seem to be working quite as well. We're investigating alternatives, different chemical compounds, different application technologies, and again, we're partnering up with the end users early on, PE Old Soldier, the USDA, Natick, and Small Business, to try to make this come together. So this is sort of one of the big things that Vector Control is going to be looking ahead to in the near future. And with that, I'll take any questions if there's time.